Welcome to Eugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Eugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Eugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Eugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia, and with me in the studio today is Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Doing all right. It's a great time of the year and football season. Everything seems to be going okay.
Everything's going your way.
That's my team's doing well. So that's
yeah. That means West Virginia's winning.
Oh, I knew that it would be something related to West Virginia.
See, I wasn't going to plug that, but thank you all. I appreciate it. We're going to begin the show today by going to Dallas, Texas, and beginning the interview there. So I'm going to turn it over to Brad. Brad, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning. And this is Brad Culp. I've got Kevin Ritz with me this morning as a co-host. And today we
have Greg Zarbo from the Alzheimer's Association. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being here with us this morning.
Appreciate the invite.
Greg is the manager of early detection programs for the Alzheimer's Association. Greg, we're going to start this the way that we usually do, which is to get you to tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, and how did you get where you are today?
Well, I grew up outside of Buffalo, New York, in a town adjacent to Buffalo called Cheektowaga, which was an Indian name. There are a lot of Indian names up there. And came down here to Texas in 1981. Briefly, the Reagan administration cut contracts for both my wife and myself, and we were without jobs, and had a friend that said there's jobs all over, particularly for nurses, and my wife is a nurse, so we hopped on down to Texas. So been down here since then, and while I was in New York, I got a bachelor's degree in human services, and that's what started my career, if you will, in nonprofit. I've worked in nonprofit for about 30 years, and I... when I got here to Texas, or shortly after, I began to work at what was then MHMR, or Mental Health and Mental Retardation, now known as North Star, under a managed care project. Worked with them for about 9 years, and then moved over to what is called Mental Health America. And I was their program manager there, and I worked with Mental Health America for 18 years. And my title beside program manager, as you might understand, was dinosaur of the organization because I didn't know when to move. Finally, moved on about a year ago, a little over a year ago, to the Alzheimer's Association. And I am their, as mentioned, their manager of early detection programs. And my work there involves going out to businesses and churches and educating the general public about Alzheimer's disease.
And I'm sorry, how long have you been with the Alzheimer's Association?
A little over a year.
A year, okay.
Mm-hmm. Greg, so you mentioned that you're the manager of the early detection programs. What are some of the early detection programs that are available through the Alzheimer's Association?
Sure. We have one project that we call Trailblazers, and that program puts together those individuals with early stage Alzheimer's, and what that means is as they are just recently diagnosed, up until the time which their condition, if you will, progresses, they get together with their caregiver or care partner, as the case may be, and we have 8 weeks of education that we provide for the care partner as well as the person with early stage Alzheimer's. So we bring in experts from around the community. So we might bring in an attorney, as an example, to talk about legal and financial issues, or we'll bring in someone from UT Southwestern to talk about some of the trials that they're doing and or the research that they're engaged in, as well as the treatment that they offer. So after the 8 weeks of education, then those same people, might be 10, 12 people, they form a support group, and that's ongoing until which time that they, again, progress into mid-stage, and then we offer another group of programs for that group. Additionally, one of the programs that we're expanding in the community is our respite care that we call Caregiver's Day Out. And that program is offered at churches, several churches throughout the area. Just to give you an example, in December, we believe at least that the Potter's House, which is a huge church here in Dallas, will be offering this program that allows the caregiver on a weekly basis to take their family member to a trusted place, their congregation, or it might be a neighboring place of faith. And the family member can drop off their loved one and get 4 hours of relief, if you will, for that caregiver. Meanwhile, the person with early to mid-stage Alzheimer's gets one-on-one volunteer activities, socialization from trained volunteers, and we actually provide the training for those volunteers.
Is there a resource that people can go to find out if those programs or where those programs are located in their community?
Yeah, they can actually call our 800 number, and that is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, multilingual number, and that is 1-800-272-3900. And when they call that, they will be able to talk to somebody in their native language, be it Cantonese or Spanish or whatever. They will get an interpreter to work with that person, and they can get that information over the phone, or they can get it online, and that is at our website, which is www.alzdallas.org, and that same information is online. One other program that I should mention that we're offering in two locations, and that is our ART programs. And again, that is for early stage Alzheimer's. And that is being offered at the Dallas Museum of Art and the Meadows Museum of Art. As you might expect by the nature of where we're doing this, the folks go with their care partners or they can go on their own. And they engage in art activities, go to the art galleries, discuss, you know, art types of projects. And so just as an example, yesterday, one of my staff, Amanda Quicksall, who is working with that project and our Trailblazers project, went there and they were working on cubism. So they took pictures and formed this together. And she said to me, you know, Greg, those folks were so engaged. It was wonderful. She left after about an hour and a half and they were still at it. And so it's a really nice program that the art museums in the area are offering for us.
Great. I want to go back for a minute. I realize you're not, you know, clinical staff.
Right.
But relative to early detection, mm-hmm. My understanding is it can be a little tricky to identify Alzheimer's, you know, at least definitively, mm-hmm. in the early stages. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the things that I do when I go out and I educate the public is we have a couple of presentations, one of which is called Know the 10 Warning Signs. And so it lists what are the symptoms that are pretty common. And it's things like, you know, we all forget. If I walk into the house, I might forget where I set my cell phone. Or I might forget where I've set down my keys. When we're talking about the 10 warning signs, though, things begin to disrupt the person's daily living. So instead of just forgetting where I left my cell phone, I might be putting it in an unusual place. So as an example, you know, I might have put it in the refrigerator, and in order to find it, I have to call it and listen to it ring in the refrigerator, or I might put my keys in a fruit bowl. There's also some other detection, if you will, symptoms that we're trying to get the public to understand. We all have maybe a loss of word, that perfect word that we're trying to find. This is a bit more complicated, though. As this disease progresses, particularly as it progresses into mid-stage, the person with this disease begins to forget not only the perfect word, but what they were talking about, maybe in the middle of a sentence. They also will have trouble following a conversation. So if the three of us are sitting, or Sam is on the phone, that person might not be able to follow one point to the next because their short-term memory is what's affected typically first with Alzheimer's disease.
Are you listening, Sam? We have.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We never mind. We have that problem with Sam.
Yes, I can tell.
Interesting that you pulled Sam out. You know, with all the people that are on this in this broadcast.
Stay with us, Sam.
Try to keep up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So
I don't have anything to say.
Then you're probably better. There are other warning signs, but. For a person to really get tested, you know, they can go to their general physician, and the physician might give them an indication if there's been some form of memory loss. But to really get this evaluated, they need a comprehensive evaluation. And that means going through getting a family history. It might mean getting an MRI. It'll mean blood test. It will mean neurological testing. And so when they do that compilation of testing, at this point, when the physicians do that type of testing or that accumulation of tests, they now have a 90% success rate, more than 90% success rate of determining not only is this Alzheimer's, but might it be another form of dementia? And dementia is a broad term that describes a number of different types of memory loss.
And my understanding is, and I think we had discussed this a year ago when we had the Alzheimer's Association on here in Dallas, that you do cover other dementias other than just Alzheimer's.
Yes, we do.
Even though it's called the Alzheimer's Association.
Correct. So the services that we offer are for any form of dementia, be it Parkinson's, Lewy body, frontal temporal, whatever the dementia is, we offer the services for the individual with dementia as well as their families.
With respect to the early detection programs and the education, mm-hmm. do you treat these dementias essentially the same way, or are there differences?
That's really pretty much a medical question, but I to address that, the symptomatology and how it demonstrates itself is different from one of these types of dementia to the next. So what you treat that dementia with, be it medication, be it the therapy, would be different from one to the next.
Yeah, and let me be clear about the question.
Okay.
I think, and I understand from a clinical perspective that there may be differences, but from an educational perspective, mm-hmm. you know, on helping families okay. deal with it, helping the patients understand
yeah.
it,
yeah.
you know, particularly in the early stages, mm-hmm. you know, because there may be moments of great clarity
yes.
in the early stages.
Right. The education that we offer is pretty much universal in the general sense of trying to get them to understand general symptomatology about memory loss, about behavior changes, about changes in terms of their daily activities, communication with that individual. Certainly, if a person has one type of dementia, call it frontal temporal as an example, their behavior changes might be vastly different. We also want to be able to allow people to know that within the scope of what's considered dementia, there are progressive forms of dementia that are non-curable, that do get worse, and there are what we call non-progressive, or those diseases that might be, as an example, from hypothyroidism, can cause confusion. Diabetes, if a person is going through diabetic shock, can look very much like Alzheimer's or depression. And so we try to kind of give them a general scope of what to look for and also where to get services in the community.
Sure.
Greg, the we talked about some of your early detection programs and some of the other, the respite program. Is there a resource people can go to really see everything that the Alzheimer's Association has to offer and how they can contact somebody about getting help?
Mm-hmm. Certainly that website that I mentioned earlier, the www.alzdallas.org, there is a list of different services that our particular chapter offers. And when I'm saying our particular chapter, our organization has over 70 chapters across the country. There is a national website, and particularly on that national website, there is just a host of information. Streaming videos, there are fact sheets, there are brochures, and so there's all kinds of information that exists both on our website and the national website that tells people the list of different services that we have. Certainly when I go out and do a presentation, I discuss list and discuss in detail what are the services that we have to offer and to who.
Okay, and for people that might want to get involved with helping, mm-hmm. are there volunteer opportunities and things like that?
Absolutely. We have several volunteer opportunities, one of which is our Speakers Bureau. And in fact, we had a couple people going out to the Central Market yesterday. These same folks that are volunteers will go out into the community after they've received some training from us and help us to educate the public. We also, with our respite program that I'm talking about, we recruit volunteers from within the various churches that we're offering that program, the Caregivers Day Out. And so if there's 10 people that are involved, we need 10 volunteers on a regular basis. We also have volunteers come in and, do simple things like data entry packets and so on. We also have coming up our Walk to End Alzheimer's, and we certainly use volunteers for that event. It's become a huge event. Last year, we held that event at the Dallas Zoo. Suffice to say, we overwhelmed the zoo. I know I was one of the monkeys that was running around trying to get people parked, and it was taking 2 hours to get people parked. So we've now moved this to a different venue, the Fair Park area, which is a much larger venue here in the Dallas area. And so this year we're doing that on November 12th. Here at the Dallas Fair Park.
Did they change? Didn't this used to be called Memory Walk?
It did. It did. And we changed that so that people understood that what we're trying to do is address Alzheimer's. So the idea of calling it from moving the name from Memory Walk to Walk to End Alzheimer's speaks more to what we're trying to do as far as our mission as an organization.
Right. And tell us the date of that and how people can get involved.
Okay. That date, again, is November the 12th. And then, again, will be at Fair Park. And they can call our person that's handling that, Jenny Heiser. And her direct line is 214-540-2416, or her email is Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, dot Heiser, H-E-I-S-E-R, at ALZ.org. So through the email, or they can simply go on our website that I've mentioned, and they could volunteer through that as well. One of the things that we do with this walk is that we have teams of people that help us to raise money. And again, we had so many people last year. We ended up raising more money last year than our target goal. We just had a walk out in Longview, one of the suburbs of Dallas, and we doubled the amount of funds that we raised last year from that particular
that's
walk.
That's impressive given the economy.
And we are extremely grateful to that Longview community.
That's terrific. Even though you've only been there at the Alzheimer's Association for a year, I imagine there have been already some experiences that have been heartwarming or gratifying. Is there one that you might be able to share with us?
Sure. The group that I referred to, the Trailblazers group, where folks get together, we have what's called an advisory group. and these are individuals who are part of that Trailblazers group, and they come and they meet with us on a monthly basis, and they help us to fine-tune our early-stage programs. And I've seen, I'll use one example. I've seen one individual who spoke publicly roughly a month ago. His name is Dean. And Dean and Carolyn came to one of the respite programs that I described, our Caregiver's Day Out. And he was so positive. And this is the gentleman who has early stage Alzheimer's, and he was there with his wife. And here was his story, just quickly. He had been diagnosed several years ago with what we called mild cognitive impairment. And when he first got that diagnosis, he was okay with it. The reason is his family history had Alzheimer's throughout. In other words, his mother, his grandmother, his grandfather. So when it came to getting that diagnosis, he knew it was coming. His wife was also okay with it because she was also aware of that history. Subsequently, or about 4 years later, he then got another diagnosis of early stage Alzheimer's. Now, when a person has mild cognitive impairment, they are more likely to progress into getting early stage Alzheimer's, but it's not definite. You have a 50%, 60% greater risk factor of ending up with full-blown Alzheimer's. When they got the diagnosis of early stage Alzheimer's, for him, again, he was fine, but his wife thought, I had just hoped it was not going to progress. But I make the point of going through that story to mention that both of them, they volunteer for our organization, they volunteer for their church. Dean, who is in his mid-70s, volunteers for several organizations in his community, including where he's living. He's living in an assisted living facility. And they are part of our Trailblazers group, part of our advisory group. And these folks are just salt of the earth. I mean, they're just phenomenal people. And to see that, it gives me hope to understand that, you know, when you get this diagnosis, while it is life-threatening, and it is a disease that progresses and ends up a diagnosis that is fatal, it's the sixth leading cause of death. But when a person gets this diagnosis, life isn't over. And Dean and his wife exemplify that very well.
Well, those are good words, and it's important for all of us to remember that despite the knocks that we take, sure, life's not over.
I mean, it's a diagnosis that is, I mean, there's no question about it. It is a hideous disease, but there is life after the diagnosis. It may be a different form. It might be a different relationship that the person has with their partner, but life goes on.
Greg, if you could give a piece of advice to a senior or a caregiver or somebody who might be facing this, what would you tell them?
There's a book out there, forgive me, I'm not good with names of the author in particular, but it's a common book in the Alzheimer's arena of who's out there. It's called The 36-Hour Day, and that title exemplifies what a caregiver goes through. If they are caring for somebody in their home, which happens in about two-thirds of cases right through the late stages of Alzheimer's, their entire day, their night, their weekends, their life surrounds taking care of the individual. So I advise take a break. Use the programs that we offer, for instance, at the Alzheimer's Association, like the Respite, the Trailblazers. Get some time for yourself. The mortality rate, the rate of illness of a caregiver is actually higher than that of the person with Alzheimer's disease because of the stress level.
Wow.
So for them to get a break, have family members in your corner, have friends help take care of this individual so that you can get out and take care of yourself. Even if it's only for a few hours, it'll allow you to come back a little bit more refreshed, a little bit more ready to take on the next day.
That's excellent. I appreciate those words. How about some contact information for yourself?
Well, my direct line, and we encourage people to use that 800 number, and let me give that again, 1-800-272-3900. That's our helpline. Again, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My direct line is 214-540-2425. And my email is Greg, G-R-E-G, dot Zarbo, that is Z-A-R-B, as in boy, O, at ALZ.org. And anybody is welcome to contact me about the services that we have to offer, or several other services, and if we have time, you know, I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well.
Fantastic. Greg, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your morning to sit and visit with us.
Okay.
And with that, we'll send it back to Sam in Atlanta.
I think we're done
for
today.
Okay.
We've had a last-minute cancellation on our guest in Atlanta, so we'll just close the show. But I quickly looked up the book on my phone here. And the authors are Nancy Mace and Dr. Peter Rabens, and we'll also note that when we publish the show. So with that, we thank our listeners, and as usual, our listeners can listen to this show after the fact at www.ugeriaradio.com. Again, Greg, thanks for being here with us today. We appreciate that. We'll be back next week with another edition. And as always, we close the show. If the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, then it stands to reason that the seniors of this nation are its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.